The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1 with Elavon Merchant Services. Growing your business is easy peasy with us by your side.
At 9:34, Joseph O'Connor, what a pleasure to welcome you into studio live in glorious Technicolor and, dare I say it, flesh.
Yes,
a bit more flesh
after two years of lockdown, yes.
I mean,
it was great to see you, Ryan.
Likewise, always good to see you, but I think particularly more so today because we did something today that you haven't done for 2 years, just a second ago. A very simple act that is done by humans every day, sometimes 10 times a day.
Yes, we should probably specify.
I think now we should.
Yeah, we shook hands, so you're the first person I've shaken hands with in 2 years.
That feels so strange to hear.
Yeah, well, I actually got to the point where even, you know, if you're watching something on the telly, if you're watching a drama where people met and embraced yeah. or shook hands, you're going, oh, geez, should I ring Neffid, you know? So it's been a very long, strange time for everybody. I heard what you were saying earlier about 18-year-olds and... it's lovely to come in today, but it's actually lovely just for that reason, because it's already been a bit like therapy for me. I thought I was the only parent in the world who was thinking, I'm not ready.
Yes.
I don't know how it happened that my 16-year-old suddenly got to be 18.
That's
my
it.
Son Marcus is 18 on Monday.
Great.
And, you know, he wants to go to, he's doing the Leaving Cert soon. He wants to go to college in another country. And I am just about getting my head around him, getting the bus into town, you know.
Yeah, I do.
So, it has suddenly crept up on us. It's been a very trying time for teenagers. 2 years is yeah. a big chunk of your life when you're only 17 or 18. I think they've been marvellous. You know, their patience and their fortitude, that business of learning over Zoom, where you know you're looking at a flat screen, so challenging, very challenging for the teachers as well. You know, I have a day job where I teach in the University of Limerick, and I think every really good teacher wants to be in the room with the students.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
every teacher knows, or everybody who works with a group of people would know. You would know presenting
sure.
the program. There's a whole layer of communication that is nothing to do with words. It's reaction and response, and there's an intensity of silence when people are listening.
Yeah.
And you kind of know when they're not, and you know when a joke doesn't fall flat, and you know, all
yeah.
of that. We pick up things through those kind of antennae, and they've been gone from us for so long. And then, I guess, just the starkness of Zoom. Mm. You know, if you're teaching a class or having a meeting on Zoom, it starts at 11 o'clock, you know, there's no hanging around beforehand. There's
Montauk,
no chat on
yeah.
the way in. Starts at 11 o'clock and it ends at 11:30. A student can't come up to you afterwards who
yes.
is a bit shy in the class and ask you a question. You can't come up in the corridor and say, could you explain that? There's no going for coffee with colleagues, all of that. So I think I was very lucky, very privileged, because I've worked as a writer for such a long time. I know what it is to sit in a room by yourself. Mm. That's what a novelist does sometimes for months and for years. But I mean, I did feel an empathy for a lot of my colleagues at the University of Limerick and a lot of people teaching my kids and everybody else's kids, because I think a lot of a teacher's identity is actually bound up with yeah. being in a room. So it's great to get to this point, isn't it?
It's beautiful. And, you know, I've often said about teachers, I have great respect for teachers. And I've often said that being a teacher is not dissimilar to being a chat show host, because you've got a live audience. You've got sometimes maybe 10 shows a day and you've got to keep that room.
Well, I mean, really good teachers, I think, are performers. I mean,
yes.
The great teachers that I've met, I have a colleague in Limerick, Sarah Moore Fitzgerald, people who have children and teenagers who read would know Sarah, because she's a very accomplished children and young adult author. But to watch her in a room, like you're watching knowledge and breadth right. and depth of knowledge and communication and all of that. But there is a little bit of performance involved with
sure.
a very, very good teacher. You know, when I think back to my days in UCD, back in the early 80s, I was so fortunate to have Declan Kybert
wow, yeah.
as a lecturer and tutor. And you'd kind of look forward to Declan's lectures. You know, it wasn't a show, But there was something of performance going on. And that, of course, that adds to the joy of learning. You want to feel you're at something.
I remember Victor Connerty was the guy who did lectures in Roman history. And he always had the look of a Roman emperor himself. You know, the hair brushed slightly forward, the grey hair, great build, but also lovely tone. Yeah. And those lectures were, like you just kind of, they were like great history gigs. You know, like you'd nearly pay in to go to see them.
Yeah, would. There was a great sense of excitement and occasion. We had another wonderful man, Terry Dolan.
Oh, yeah, he was a regular here.
A great man. Yeah. I mean, I loved him so much. Man, yes. But I remember he came in once, there's a great line from Shakespeare's The Tempest, the beginning of The Tempest. And Terry came in, it was a Saturday morning lecture, and he looked at this room full of slightly bedraggled, dishevelled students. Yeah. You were allowed smoke in the lecture hall in those days. Can you imagine such a thing? And he looked at us and he quoted from the beginning of The Tempest, "Hell is empty and all the devils are here." So he was a bit of a showman as well as a very learned and scholarly man.
Did you have, you're talking about a lot about third level there. Did you have any secondary or primary school teachers that were there's generally always one, if not two, kind of your Mr. Chips kind of character?
I had a couple of great teachers, including the first teacher I ever had when I was 4 or 5.
Really? That far back?
Yeah, St. Joseph of Cluny School.
Kind of appropriate.
Mother Lawrence was her name. And she seemed to me at that time to be like an extraordinarily old person. She was probably younger than I am now. And she was passionate about reading and writing. We were only 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And I can remember a lot of my joy and pleasure in reading coming from her, because she used to say, even though we were very young kids, you know, if you learn to read, don't think of it as a burden. This is joy. This is opening up the doors of the whole world. Learn to read, you'll never be alone.
Yeah.
You know, read a novel, it'll take you off anywhere you want to go.
Amazing.
And she used to say to us again, even though we were young, and if you learn to write, you can express yourself. You can actually say what you mean. You
at
can
that
say
age,
what
right,
you
wasn't
want
she something?
If you know how to write. She was a great woman, and I used to sometimes visit her afterwards while into my 20s and early 30s. And she was still really impressive. Woman, and she used to say to me that she could remember every child that she had ever taught.
Amazing.
And I think that she did. So a teacher makes a huge difference, as you know, and as everybody listening.
I was around that age when Miss Kearns was a teacher. I just remembering as you speak, and she was a wonderful person who would focus a lot on reading to us, which of course was again part of that thing, that formative thing. But when you're at that age, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but when at that age, everyone's 110. And then only a number of years ago, I saw her and she looked exactly the same.
Yeah.
Exactly the same, weirdly.
Yes.
But teachers, I remember seeing when I was my girls when they were much younger, and if they saw a teacher in the bookshop or in the supermarket, they couldn't believe it.
Oh, I know. Like, no, it's
it might as well seem Tom Cruise in Spar. You're like going, lads, she's Mrs. Fillion name here. She's there. She's got a bag and she's buying pasta.
Oh, yeah. I read an amazing book recently by Hannah Lowe, the English poet. It's called The Kids.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful collection of her poems written as a collection.
Lovely.
In other words, it's not just stuff that she amassed over the years. It's a collection of 30 or 40 poems about her experiences as a teacher in the inner city of London, and it won the Costa Book of the Year Prize, a very unusual, amazing achievement for a book of poetry. Really recommend it. Fabulous book, but she has a lovely poem in it about pushing her baby along in a stroller one day in southeast London. And she comes to a pedestrian crossing and she stops. The lights aren't with her, so she stops and she's waiting. And she looks across the street and there's a very handsome young man on the other side of the street looking back at her, and she thinks, "Oh God, that's kind of great, you know.
Still getting the eye.
Young fellas don't really look at me
like
that anymore. Here I am with pushing my baby, and the lights change, and she goes halfway across, and the young fella says, "Do you remember me, miss? you taught me English in third year."
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're amazing people, and we should salute them and honour them for what they've done for us all over the last 2 years, and really remember what the teenagers have been through as well, because I don't know, their stoicism and their strength, you know, has really taught some of us who are older a lot. And it's great to come to that point now where they have a more recognisable future, you know.
Isn't it lovely to overhear conversations of younger people about the house? And you're not eavesdropping, you're just making the dinner, you hear. And you, I find, or not even eavesdropping, but when they're talking to you about their lives, how educational that is for us at a certain vintage to go, oh, right, okay, so that's what.
Yeah.
Like they're really the link generation.
Oh, they are, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I've learned so much from my two sons. I better not say that too much now because they'd start charging me fees for having taught me something. My younger lad who I mentioned, he's a big classics guy. You know, you mentioned the classics earlier. We were going for a walk around Paris Court recently during the lockdown. Well, that was one of the places you were allowed to go. And there's all those classical
columns,
statues. Characters and Neptune in the pond and all of that. But he was able to explain to me who all of these people were. And just that whole kind of reservoir of stories from the classical world really back in a big way. I see a lot of books about the classics doing very well. I don't know if it's a lockdown thing that maybe we all went back to an older kind of set of stories or an older literature.
The old Greek myths have come back, but have been set in, like, Pat Barker.
Absolutely.
Baker, is it Baker?
Barker.
Through I love the girls of Troy, the women of Troy, and the other one, but they were seen through a feminist prism, if you like.
Yeah.
And then a whole lot of young adult books, again, ancient Greece. So it's all back in. I was only saying to my youngest the other day about, I was celebrating the joy of an arts degree and how enlightening it can be. And just like your son, I was saying that, you know, I did Greek and Roman, whatever.
Yeah.
And no matter where you go in the world, you'll see a pillar or like your son with the statue. You'll never be bored. And you know, if you go and study law, you study law. Or if you study business, you study business. Or if you're an electrician, you're an electrician. But it's great if you have the opportunity to look at these, at the ancient world.
Stephen Fry's books.
It's divided by people. Doing
very, very well about that. I think it's somehow related to lockdown and maybe having more time to read and maybe having more time to think about other kinds of storytelling than the ones we're used to. Anyway, it's an exciting kind of development for readers and a very good time.
So I watched a preview, Joseph, of the Liffey last night, which is the documentary that you wrote, which is narrated by Angeline Ball, the actor, but you wrote her, I suppose her script is not the right word because it's much more than a script. It's actually beautiful. Isn't it like a love letter to the Liffey?
Well, yeah. I mean, the show is called The Liffey. It starts on Sunday night, RTE1, 7:30 for 6 weeks. And I suppose it's looking at the Liffey as a living character, as a living thing. I mean, in the very literal sense, the Liffey is a life system. It supports the insects and the birds and the animals and the clean air. And we wouldn't have the city of Dublin without it. But when I was approached to write it, I was saying to the producer and the director, there's an old tradition of embodying rivers or characterising rivers. James Joyce, who we celebrate this month, of course, the centenary of Ulysses, really the hero of his final book, Finnegan's Wake, is an Olivia, you know, the personification of the Liffey. And all Dubliners would know the phrase an Olivia, perhaps from the Irish Awen na Liffa. So there are moments in this documentary series where the Liffey speaks to us, and then there are moments where it's linking up a collection of stories from amazing people, a couple of dozen people who work on the river or who live by the river or who have an interest in it. Wonderful man called Christopher Moriarty, who has kind of spent his whole life walking the Liffey and thinking about it and studying it. And from him to a young man called Gary Riley, who's a crane operator in Dublin Port, who just talks about the sheer joy. I mean, it's so touching and inspiring. He says, you know, I go to work every morning. I climb up into this crane. I'm 30 metres above the city of Dublin. I might see the sun coming up and making the water of the Liffey golden. Nobody has a job like me. Yeah. And all of these people talking about the Liffey with great tenderness, like a kind of beloved relative.
Yes.
I mean, in the opening episode, which is on Sunday night, there's a wonderful sequence with a man called David Green.
Yes.
And he...
the job he has.
Yeah, he has an amazing job. The Poddle, the River Poddle, flows through the Liberties, where my own family were from, under Dame Street and Temple Bar, and it enters the Liffey through a kind of beautifully built tunnel vault from the 19th century. And it's David's job to look after this. So, I mean, I would really recommend...
Yeah, he goes right down. He's lower down. 65 years old.
It's through an entrance hatch on Dame Street. And he goes down into this tunnel, which is so kind of spooky and evocative. It's the touch of Bram Stoker, actually,
who you mentioned in it. Yeah, but that's lovely.
So it's his job to look after this old tunnel. And he says at one point, you know, it's great, it's very well built, and I find it beautiful, but it's old and it's getting on. And like a lot of us who are getting on, it needs a bit of love and tenderness.
That's right, yeah.
And I was just so struck all the way through writing the Liffey by the great warmth and love and affection that Dubliners have for the river.
Uisce Faoi Thalamh, that's the term that jumped out.
Uisce Faoi Thalamh,
well, beautiful. Because as we were looking at David Green in his subterranean activities, I was thinking, wow, I could be walking along Dame Street and underneath there's a whole subterranean...
Well, there is. And I mean, Uisce Faoi Thalamh, the Irish phrase that means underground water, and it also means a conspiracy. You know, if you have an Uisce Faoi Thalamh going on with somebody, you're getting up to a bit of skullduggery. And there is a touch of that in this beautiful kind of shadowy, echoey vault that David is walking through. So, like, the footage in the Liffey, it's really beautiful.
And the drone footage, of course.
The drone footage that is available now, I can promise, I hope that the words are beautiful, but I can promise that the stories people tell in the show are beautiful. Yeah. And the visuals of the Liffey, you will never have seen a depiction of the river Liffey like this.
Watching it from, especially from the sky, and as I say, the drone footage of it, it makes sense why Dublin, which of course, if in another world, we're Blackpool, I mean Dublin, that's what we are. But what cities are built, of course, around what was the same, essentially the aquatic M50 of its time.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's funny you put it that way, Ryan, because for me, like, my interest in the Liffey and my love for the river, it goes back to childhood. As I mentioned, my family originally were from Francis Street in the Liberties, which is a 5-minute walk from the river. And I can remember my late grandfather, my dad's dad, who I always remember as a rather sunny, amiable granddad. I think a little bit more than he had been a father. You know, I think he was a fairly strict and somber father in those days, as fathers tended to be or thought they should be. But by the time I came along, he was a lovely man who had a kind of stoical love of the fact that in Ireland there is rain. He loved the rain. If it was a rainy day, he'd say, look at that liquid sunshine.
Yeah, I love it, after his own heart.
Aren't we lucky to live in a country where there's rain? And he would tell us quite seriously, he was a religious man and he meant it when he said, you know, it is a blessing for us.
Wow.
Some countries in the world, a lot of people in the world, they don't have water. And they struggle all their lives to find water. And we live in this country, we live in this city where it falls out of the sky.
Funny
and we love that.
How the same could be said for education and democracy.
Yeah.
You know, no, I really mean that. Yeah, I remember, it stayed with me watching those girls trying to get into school in Kabul in Afghanistan when they were told they could come back and they were told, no, you can't actually. And the tears out of their eyes. And I thought, God, imagine all the kids going to school in Ireland today thinking how lucky you are.
Yeah, you know? Oh, for sure. Well, he would have had a great sense of that. And it was very present in how we talked about the river. The Guinness Brewery, as people will know, is it's not far from the Liberties, just up the river. And he didn't work in Guinness. I think he invested a fair bit and contributed to the profits
I know that.
Over the years. But there were family members who did, and he knew men who did. And he used to say with a sense of wonder, like when you think there's men up there working today and they get there, the hops and the barley from the countryside, and they get the Liffey water and they purify that and they make a barrel of Guinness and it's put on a barge and it's taken down to Liffey. And at that time, there still were Liffey barges. And it gets to the docks at Sheriff Street and it's put onto a ship and that goes out into the Irish Sea. And that barrel of Guinness could end up in Australia. Yeah. And I mean, I was mesmerised listening to this. Now, a real sense that the Liffey is our connection to the world. Yeah. It's part of our own identity. talking about books and literature and song, Ryan, you know, the number of novelists and poets from James Joyce, even Philip Larkin has beautiful poems about the Liffey and the Dubliners and Frank Hart, the wonderful, wonderful poems. If we have a minute at the end, I might read one by Evan Boland about the Liffey. So it's a place that's been beloved of artists and Dubliners and walkers. And I would want to mention just a particular thing about this series. The people who worked on the Liffey back in the 19th century to structure it and reshape it and heighten the walls of the port, often very dirty, dangerous, hard work. And the people who gave their blood, sweat and toil so that we would have the city that we have, who were often not celebrated and we often unsung, and we tried to sing them a bit in this series. There's the engineer, it just came into my mind, you were talking about Bram Stoker, the great Dublin Victorian engineer who built the Carlisle Bridge, later O'Connell Bridge, and the diving bell so that the workers could extend the walls of the port. Brilliant name of Bindon Blood Stoney. And no Irish novelist has ever made up a character with a more fabulous name than that.
Joseph, stay with us because I have a break to go. We have about 1 minute left in time. I think you'd like to give it to the poem and I'd like you to give it to the poem. So let's do that in just a sec.
The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1.
Joseph O'Connor is still with us, and this is a farewell, a few lines from Evan Boland.
I praise the gifts of the river, its shiftless and glittering retelling of a city, its clarity as it flows in the company of runt flowers and herons, around a bend at Island Bridge and under 13 bridges to the sea, its patience at twilight, swans nesting by it, neon wincing into it, maker of places, remembrances, narrate such fragments for me.
Beautiful.
Isn't it lovely?
That's good.
The great Evan Boland.
It's
if I can just mention very, very, very quickly, Ryan, UL Creative Writing Festival, which is happening next weekend on the beautiful UL campus by the River Shannon.
What a lineup.
An amazing lineup. Yeah. Roddy Doyle, Kevin Barry, Donal Ryan, who I know you love and I love, Lisa McInerney, Danielle McLaughlin, Kit Duval, Louise Kennedy, Sebastian Barry, all of the details and all of the full programme on uch.ie.
Sounds amazing. And Joseph, and of course, the Liffey is on RTE1 television Sunday night at 7:30 this Sunday. Great to see you. Can we do this again sometime soon?
Love
please?
To. Yeah, I'd love to, Ryan.
The chair is waiting for you, so we'll get a half decent coffee in for you. Joseph O'Connor, so much love for you on text. A lot of love for Shadow Play as well as everything else in between. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Great pleasure, Ryan. Thanks.